Javier's web FTA region 4.
Is it everyone? All right, thank you. Our action, our agenda today, we did add, have one item added, election of chair and vice chair that was added today. And then that's now item number two. I did have one question also about item number three for the draft UPWP. It's listed under action items, but what I saw said it was for review and comment. So does that need to be an action item? Are we endorsing that today or? For review. Okay, okay. All right, thank you. All right, has everyone else had an opportunity to look at the agenda? Does anyone have any other questions? Anything else they want to add to the agenda? Okay. At this time, I'll request a motion to approve the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda, Les Fussell.
Second, Michelle Strickland.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Moving to the action items then, the first item is approval of the October 20th, 2022 meeting minutes. Hopefully everyone's had an opportunity to review those and submit any comments or questions. Is there any discussion at this time? Okay. If not, I will request a motion to approve the meeting minutes from October 20th, 2022.
So moved, Michelle Strickland.
I'll second that. Pamela Bernard. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion passes. Next item on the agenda then is election of chair and vice chair for calendar year 2023. And I will say that I have enjoyed being the chairwoman last year and several years in the past, but I'm stepping down. And so at this time, I would like to nominate Les Fussell, did I say that right? For the chairman for next year. Are there any other nominations for chairman? Anyone else? You can nominate yourself if you would, if you're interested in the job. Can I also nominate a vice chair, or do we do it one at a time? Okay. All right. Well, any other nominations? Okay. Then at this time, let's vote. Everyone in favor of Les being the chairman for next year, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Do you accept Les? All right. We have a new chairman. Congratulations. All right. For vice chair, I would like to nominate Kayla Brown. What?
Liam? Actually, Chatham Area Transit would like to be nominated for vice chair.
Okay. Okay. Well, Sedgwick. William Sedgwick. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Like
that.
Okay. Well, we have two nominations. That's fine. We're good with that. So at this time, let's vote. All in favor of William Sedgwick. Please, I guess you want to raise hands. Is that easier than saying aye so we can get a good vote number? They both nominated themselves, so.
I think I nominated myself because nobody else had nominated themselves.
Oh, oh, okay.
So if Billy would rather have it, I will step back.
Okay. Okay, but we still have Kat and Billy. Is it Billy? William?
William's with Chatham.
Oh, oh, okay, okay. So you're nominating him. Okay, not you. Okay.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, okay.
He will now be sitting in as representative for Chatham Area Transit from here out.
Gotcha. Okay. Then in that case, since are Kayla, you sure?
Yep.
Okay. So since we just have one nominee, Is there any other nominations this time for vice chair? Okay, so we'll go to vote. To everyone, all in favors for William Sedgwick Catt to be the vice chair, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Congratulations. We have a vice chair. Okay, so we're all set for next year. Moving right along, the next item I believe on the agenda is the MTP. Is it? Oh, okay, that got moved. So we're at the UPWP draft for 2024. Dakota.
Update on the UPWP. On this is the process that we were just in December. We will ask all the committee members to just review the preliminary draft and provide the comments and then endorse us to send the draft to FTA and GDOT for review. And we will give them 30-day review period. And then back in February, we will be adopting the UPWP. So I'm just going to do a very quick review and probably get some information, get some input from you as well. So I'm just going to show you how the UPWP is organized. We actually consolidated, because previously you have task one all the way to task of 13 or something. So now we consolidated all of that. So you will see we only have like five tasks. Administration, public involvement, data collection and analysis, system planning and operations. So like freight plan, MTP, TIP, congestion management, everything is included under system planning and operations. And then transit planning has its own task, and then special studies would only list the consultant projects. So just want to let you know this is how it's organized. And then next year's emphasis areas, as you know, that we are updating our 2045 MTP. So that will be really our focus area. So the MTP, because we kicked off this year and then did the survey. So next year we're going to develop the revenue projections and then the project prioritizations and then incorporating all the study recommendations and then develop the prioritized project list and then have the draft ready for public review. So that's the focus for next year. And also we are going to update the congestion management process because the CMP recommendations will be incorporated into the 2050 MTP. Jasmine will be the project manager, so we will deal with it probably later, probably starting in January, so we will see what we can do for the CMP. And we will also finish the freight plan update and the urban flooding model. We were hoping to have the TIP, fiscal year 2024 to 2027 TIP adopted in June of next year. So in fiscal year 2024, we will just do the maintenance through amendments and administrative modifications. And then we still have to continue to address certification review recommendations and also monitor and implement the new funding legislation, Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, IIJA. So those would be the emphasis areas. And also, I want to show you, I have revised the budget summary. I divided it into different parts for the budget summary in the UPWP. Previously, you see a very, very big table. So this time, I decided to just reorganize it because we normally receive the funding source to fund the MPO operations would be the formula PL funds and the Section 5303 funds. So I show this summary over here. So for fiscal year 2024, the total PL formula funds is about $436,000. And then for the Section 5303, we have about $176,000. So these would be the funds for the core MPO to support the MPO operation. And so if we manage the studies, special studies, or coordinating with the 204 study, something like that, it will be covered under system planning operations because all those studies will be fit into the 2050 plan and eventually TIP. The transit planning, we also, because the 2050 plan also includes that it's multimodal, so it will be including a transit section as well. And transit also has a TIP. The short range planning would be like transit development plan, so we'll be coordinated with CAT. administration that supports the ACAD and all these MPO functions. So this would be the MPO budget. So you see this organized. So the total MPO budget is about $765,000. And then I have a second page that shows all the transit studies, because we request some discretionary 5303 funds for the remix purchase, and that's about $35,500. I listed them over here. And then there are several transit studies that is ongoing and probably will continue in fiscal 2024. Those will be the transit development plan and master transit plan. They were using, these two studies are using 5307 funds. And then CAD is also doing the ARP funded study, American Rescue Plan funds. Probably that will continue to fiscal 2024. And then the AOPP funded study probably will continue into fiscal 2024. And these funds are just listed over here for information because they are not used to support the MPO planning efforts. But we know that we're coordinating with these studies. So we're listed over here. This is for the transit portion. And then for the highway portion, we actually, we have different funding sources. The discretionary PR funds, we have the regional free transportation plan and urban flooding model. And these will be probably, the completion, expected completion date would be October 31st. So it's by the contract. So we know that those will be the ending date. So they will continue in fiscal 2024. And we also have several other funding sources. One of them is CRRSS. The study is US 80 corridor study. And so we know it probably, if it's completed in fiscal 2024, early part of fiscal 2024, probably we would expect probably July, August to October. So that's CRRSA funds. And then we know there will be several studies starting probably in late fiscal 2023, and intensive development will start in fiscal 2024. Those would be the three studies that Chatham County will conduct. One is the US 17 corridor study, and another one is Steroid 204 access study, and then the President Street Rail Crossing Elimination Study. And these studies actually got awarded Y230 funds during the call for projects. So we are going to process the TIP amendments at this meeting. So as soon as we put them in the TIP, and then GDOT authorized the funds, GDOT and FHRB authorized the funds, and then the county can start the RFP process. So I think RFP process will be at least a 2 months, 3 months process. So you probably would start, I would say, April or May, probably.
Well, I think we can actually start the RFP process before
the funding authorization,
as long as we don't give notice to proceed.
I believe
I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, please tell me.
Yeah, actually, we have to consult with GDOT. Can they? Okay. So county can start the RFP process, and as soon as the funds are authorized, and you can execute a contract with GDOT. And execute contract between county and the consultant. So all of these funds are listed over here for information purposes as well, because these funds are not used to cover the MPO functions. So these funds are used to cover the consultant cost. So I'm just listing them over here. And then in the final table, you will see how much is covering the MPO functions, and how much is covering the transit planning efforts, and how much is covering the special studies over here. So I reorganized the budget table this way. So if you have any questions or comments, just let me know, or if you don't agree with me. And then I'm not going to deal with all of the specific tasks, because I just made updates on like what has been accomplished in fiscal 2023 and what are being planned in fiscal 2024 under each task. But I do want to focus on the special studies, because the funding studies would be hold on, that's task six. So the funded studies will include the fleet plan, urban flooding model, US 80 corridor study, Steroid 204 access study, State Route 25 US 17 corridor study and the President Street study. So these would be funded studies. But we might, if any of you want to apply for the discretionary PL funds or Y230 funds, so we have to make sure before the funding award, those studies are included in the UPWP unfunded section as well. But this is a part that I do need your attention. So I want to know, does Chatham County still want to pursue the Islands Expressway study?
Yes, at some point in time. I'm not sure exactly when, but when would be the next opportunity to apply for PL funds?
March. Okay. March and September.
Yeah, I'm just guessing maybe September just because
okay.
March, we've got those other three studies.
Okay.
So
we'll just leave it in here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Okay. The other one, this purchase of transportation data and analytical tools was supposed to help us to do the CMP because at that time, Mark was managing the CMP, but after he retired and we didn't hire Jasmine until July. So we still need to figure out whether we will need this or not. So if we can get this done probably by the end of June of this year, we probably wouldn't need this part in fiscal year 2024. So we have to decide on this part a little bit later. And what about this one, Old River Road? Do you need this one?
That's tricky because really the problem is we have to be able to do that in conjunction with Effingham County, I believe it is, and so or GDOT because the county line is in kind of a weird place, so you can't have a study that just ends at the county line. It doesn't really make sense. So it's hard to answer that question because we tried before, but we weren't able to get the participation and coordination that was required. So it just you need an answer.
Well,
I can try to get one for you.
I mean, this is
today.
Fiscal year 2024. So yeah. I mean, if you're not certain, we can still leave it in.
Yeah. Now, and then I'll try to see if there's if that's something we can still want to pursue.
Yeah, and we also have to revise our MPO boundary if the census, as expected, released the Savannah urban area boundary in December. And then our revised boundary might include more of Effingham County. So that portion might be included in our MPO boundary.
That was for a study, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you have?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, give us some input on this, think about it.
I'll check into that.
Okay. And then the other transit studies were requested by CAT to be included in fiscal year 2023 UPWP. So, I don't know whether they need to be carried forward to fiscal 2024. So I would like to get some input from CAT, like transit-oriented development study.
So CAT would like to keep all of the unfunded studies there for fiscal year 24. We expect with our planning funding, the AAOP and ARP, that a few of these we will be able to fund at a later time, especially as we finish up the master transit plan.
Okay. So we want to leave the transit-oriented development study and bus stop amenity study, and then mobility hub study and program and bus rapid transit feasibility study in the unfunded section?
For right now, today, yes.
Okay.
And out of the four, there may be one that we might like to drop, but we want to get a little bit further in our master transit plan first.
Okay, we can, in that case, I think we would just leave these studies in the fiscal 2024 UPWP, making them eligible to apply for funding. So we don't have to do UPWP amendments if you need to pursue some future funding. So because if they are already included in the unfunded section, and then we don't have to do the amendment. So we can just apply for the funds. If they get funds, we can move to the funded section.
That would be great.
Okay. So those would be the highlights that I want to mention today for the UPWP development. If you have some time to review the document and send me the comments before the end of next Wednesday, and I'm targeting to send the revised draft to FHW and FTA and GDOT for a 30-day review period. So if you just review that information and let me know if you have any comments. Great, thank you. And then we'll just ask for TCC to endorse us to send the draft to those agencies. Review.
Okay, thank you, Waikato. Does anyone have any questions or comments at this time? Okay, please review that if you get a chance and give comments to Waikato by next, before next Wednesday. At this time, I'll request a motion to endorse the draft UPWP for 2020, fiscal year 2024.
So moved, Les Fussell.
Second, Ashley Goodrich at CAT.
All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the 2045 MTP amendments.
Okay, I will cover this one as well. As you remember that the GDOT requested to add this project, the memorial, Talmadge Memorial Bridge into the TIP, but the project wasn't included in the 2045 MTP. So we have to amend the 2045 MTP first. We actually started the first step to authorize the MPO staff to do further analysis and then come up with recommendations back in August. And then in October, we got more information on the project from GDOT. And then in November, GDOT also sent us a revised schedule and revised cost estimate. So the PE will be in fiscal year 2023, and the total cost is about $14 million. And the construction, instead of in 2023 as well, is moved to 2025. The construction cost is about $175 million. So for any project to be included in the long-range transportation plan, we have to make sure inclusion of it doesn't include kicking out all the other projects already in the plan. So we have to do the financial balance. So good news is because of the new funding legislation, IIJA, so there are some additional funds available to us. So GDOT actually suggests that we make adjustments to the assumption indicating that additional revenues will be available so that we can include the project into the MTP and the TIP, because GDOT indicated that actually they do have the money to program this project. So we would just change the assumption of the revenue projection for the 2045, indicating that the IIJA funds and additional state revenues will be able to cover the project so that we don't have to kick out any of our projects already in the plan. So we just finished in the second step at this meeting. So we will just endorse inclusion of the project into the 2045 so that the PE phase can be included in the TIP. So we are still in the 15-day public comment period. So far, I haven't received any comments. So just to ask for endorsement today.
Does anyone have any questions or comments? Okay, hearing none. At this time, I will request a motion to endorse the 2045 MTP amendments as requested.
So moved, Michelle Strickland.
I'll second that, Pamela Bernard. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
So then the last item, action item that we have for today is the December amendments to the fiscal year 2021 to 2024 TIP. And that's Jasmine. Thank you.
All right. All righty. We had, I believe, 16 items submitted to us between GDOT and I believe the City of Savannah, as well as Chatham Area of Transit for amendments to the TIP. One of our first ones is the Truman Linear Park Trail Phase B. It's to update the construction cost estimates in fiscal year 2023. For State Route 404 SPUR at Talmadge Memorial Bridge, at the PE phase to FY23, this is what Wakoto just covered. We're just trying to amend it into the TIP. And the next one is Chevis Road Improvement Project. And this is for the shifting of funding in the right-of-way phase. For the Garrod Avenue Improvement Project, is also for shifting funding, and it's both for the right-of-way phase and construction phase. The right-of-way is from fiscal year 2023 to 24. Construction is 2024 to 25. Also, we would like to amend in the newly awarded Y230 funds for this project as well, and it would be for the right-of-way phase. The City of Savannah Traffic Control Center would like to remove the Y230 funds for construction in fiscal year 2023 and replace with all local funds. I-95 at Airways Ave Interchange Improvements is to award the new Y230 funds for fiscal year 2023 for the PE phase. State Route 26/US-80 Bridge Over Boar River, the awarding of Y230 funds as well for fiscal year 2024 for the right-of-way phase. These next few projects currently do not have project numbers, but they did recently receive Y230 funds, and we would just like to amend them in a TIP as well. And that is includes State Route 204 Access Study for the PE phase, State Route 25 Corridor Study for the PE phase as well, President Street Railroad Crossing Elimination Project for the PE phase as well, the Chatham Area Transit State of Good Repair Fleet Replacement Program, and that is for construction in fiscal year 2024. Ivy and Linwood Sidewalks funds for fiscal year 2024 for the PE utility and construction. Green Island Multipurpose Trail is also awarded Y301 funds for fiscal year 2023 for the PE phase. The Tie to Town / Middle Ground Road phase as well has been awarded Y301 funds for 2023 for the PE phase. We also have a few transit projects as well. CAT would like to add the AOPP and the ARP fund studies for fiscal year 2023 in the transit section. These are all the amendments that were submitted for December. If you all have any questions about any particular project, let me know. We could just scroll to it and dive in a little deeper on the details. Other than that, I request a endorsement for this.
Okay. I just want to mention two of these projects, the Trumbull New Park Trail Phase 2B. We are still trying to get a cost estimate from the City of Savannah because current cost estimate is about $4 million for the construction, but the City of Savannah got earmark funds about $3 million. So the total cost estimate, total available revenue actually for this project is more than almost $7 million. So we are still trying to get a cost estimate update from City of Savannah. If they need $6 million or $5 million or something, so we would decide to use the earmark funds first, and that means that we can release the reserve funds back to the pot for use for other projects. So we're still updating, still waiting information from City of Savannah. The other information that I want to follow up with is with GDOT, because Chatham County did apply for the statewide 301 money for the Green Island Trail. So if you get the statewide money, and that means we don't need this our portion of this 301 money either. So we're still waiting on information on two projects. Just want to let you know.
Does anyone from GDOT have any update on that? No? Okay.
I know. The spreadsheet that you guys had for everybody that requested funds and see how much everybody ended up getting, did you guys finalize that?
I don't believe we finished finalizing.
Okay. The spreadsheet, I was asking about the spreadsheet, Wycota, from the call for projects. You know what I'm talking about? That showed what everybody asked for versus what was awarded.
Yeah, well, we haven't got any chance to update that spreadsheet yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But whatever you send us, that information, mm-hmm. yeah, that is used for this report, actually.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
Okay. You're welcome. I'm glad to help, hopefully. All right. Is there any other questions or discussion? Okay. At this time, I'll request a motion to endorse the amendments to the FY 2021 to 24 TIP to the board, to the MPO board.
Yeah. So move, Michelle Strickland.
Second, Ashley Goodrich from CAT.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you for the funding. Much appreciated. Okay, so moving on to the next item on the agenda, that would be the US 80 corridor study. And do we have Kim Lee Horn standing by to start that?
Good afternoon, Pam.
You there?
Yes, can you hear me? Hey, Pam, can you hear me?
Barely. Try it again.
Try again. Is that any better?
Yeah, that'll do. Thank you.
Okay. Would it be possible to share my screen?
Yeah, we're looking at the slide deck, but I guess, yeah, we hang on. We'll get there.
Okay, we're there. All right.
Chris, can you accept the share screen?
I believe I did.
Okay, but we're not seeing your.
Okay.
Okay, hang on. We'll try something else.
I think I've got it figured out here. How about now?
What's on your screen?
it's a cover slide with
okay.
MPO technical.
I think we're looking at the right thing then.
Okay. Well, very good. I appreciate this opportunity to present an update on the State Route 26 US 80 corridor study. Kim Lee Horn is under contract with the City of Pooler. And of course, the study is completed in cooperation with the core MPO and with GDOT. So now you should be seeing some smiling faces. Do you see that, Pam?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. So we're cooking. So on the call today, I want to introduce a few of our team members. I'm Chris Marsingale. I'm the project manager on the project. Rhodes Hunt is also on the call. Rhodes is the deputy project manager. And Denise Grabowski is participating on the call. She is our stakeholder engagement coordinator. Very similar team that you may recall completed the State Route 307 corridor study. And there is some overlap between this State Route 26 US 80 corridor study and the State Route 307 corridor study. So a quick agenda. Today, we want to give you a little bit of an update on where we are. We want to talk a little bit about the study goals and then, the purpose of this meeting. We want to do a corridor overview, and we want to talk about some of our initial research, which started back in the summer. As most of you know, there's a count blackout period during the summer when school is out of session. So we waited until school was back in session to collect data along the corridor. That is complete. And then we've identified some potential improvements So we want to cover some of those with you and then talk about the next steps in the process. So our goals are to identify and prioritize improvements for the corridor, and then to plan projects through the Corps' MTP process, and then ultimately program projects in the Corps' TIP. A little more background information, key MTP objectives. Our study should focus on improving safety, security, accessibility, mobility, and sustainability of transportation options available to people and freight. And we want to, of course, lower the frequency and severity of crashes for cars, trucks, pedestrians, and bicycles. And all of the data that we have collected to date has been collected with a focus on these objectives. We want to improve emergency response time and evacuation routes. Sometimes that's more of a byproduct of a system that works well. And we want to reduce congestion by improving access to businesses. And of course, this is a corridor that carries a pretty high volume of trucks, and it crosses a number of other corridors that handle a large volume of trucks. So maximizing the truck travel time reliability is an important component and objective of this study. So today we're going to review some existing conditions, and I'm going to ask Rhodes Hunt to jump in here in just a moment, and he'll talk about the data that we've gathered to date. And as I mentioned earlier, we've identified some problems along the corridor, and we've also identified some early versions of potential solutions. Our next steps are to actually get into the analysis of forecasted volumes and really vet some of the solutions, the early solutions that we've identified. But we also want to hear from this group problems that they're aware of along the corridor to make sure that we are identifying and evaluating all the conditions along the corridor that are problematic, especially as we move into our initial stakeholder engagement meetings. So with that, I'd ask Rhodes to give us an overview of the corridor.
Thank you, Chris. Can everybody hear me okay, first of all?
Yes.
Very good. Cool. So let's just talk a little bit about what we're studying. The US 80 corridor is about 12 miles in length. It begins at the western Chatham County line, just west there of Jimmy DeLoach Parkway, and runs through downtown Bloomingdale, Old Town Pooler, and then into Garden City, and terminates just before I-516 at Burnside Boulevard. And so when we set out to study a corridor like this, we really want to do it in two ways, one of which is by segment level and intersection level. And when I say segment level, we try to identify segments that have distinct characteristics based on the roadway typical section, their traffic, and their adjacent land use. And as you can see, we've identified six distinct segments along the route that we'll talk about as we move through the presentation. In addition to those segments, we've studied in depth 40 intersections, which equates to about half of the intersections along this portion of US 80. And so, like I said, this presentation will serve to report some of our initial research on both the intersections and the six segments. Go ahead, next slide. So, as a primer to kind of frame this conversation, this meeting today, just some questions that we want to be able to answer are, where is traffic the heaviest along the corridor? Where are there the most trucks? Which are the worst performing intersections? Where are the most crashes along the corridor? Which area has the greatest growth potential? Because that's a big question for us to answer as part of our future forecasting. And then finally, is the route a freight corridor or a commuter corridor? It's just some questions to ponder together today. So let's start with traffic. So as I said, we've done some initial traffic counting back last year before the blackout period. And again, we're going to frame this with the segments that I previously introduced. So segment one near Bloomingdale and Jimmy DeLoach Parkway has an average traffic of 23,200 vehicles per day, or VPD. And that ticks upward a little bit as you head into Pooler and segment two, with traffic a little bit larger of 26,200. Or traffic really jumps is when you get to I-95 and the traffic jumps to about 40,000 VPD right near the interchange. It drops pretty quickly as you get to the east side of I-95 heading towards Garden City. In segment four, we see traffic of about 25,400. That continues to drop in the residential portions of Garden City with 21,500. And then it goes up a little bit as you get closer to the port and at the end of our study limits in segment six with 22,600. So big picture, traffic tends to be heaviest around I-95 and then lowest in the residential portions of Garden City. So we all know that all traffic is not created equal, right? And so we really try to differentiate our traffic volumes between passenger cars and trucks, because we know trucks are a big deal here in the Savannah area. So segment one, we saw truck percentages of around 16%. Those drop in segment two, as we might have expected, in Pooler to 11%, which is the lowest percentage along the corridor. Those hold fairly steady as you continue to move east towards I-95 in segment three, about 13%. But similarly, once you get past I-95 and continue towards the port, you see those percentages really start to kick upward. Segments four and five both have percentages around 17%. But then segment six, once you get east of Chatham Parkway, those jump up to 21%. So pretty heavy truck percentages there in that segment. So when we study traffic, we really want to do it, like I said earlier, both on a segment basis and a intersection specific basis. And when we evaluate traffic at intersections, we do so by evaluating and assigning a level of service. And level services are noted based on letter grades A through F. And you can kind of equate those to the letter grades we all got in school with our report cards, where a level service A would indicate traffic or an intersection that's performing pretty well, but a level service F, not so much. And so typically most agencies use level service D as a benchmark of acceptable performance and operations. So these six intersections that you see here all operated at level service E or worse in the AM hour. And there are a couple usual suspects, one of which we're all familiar with, the State Route 307 and Dean Forest Road, which exhibited level service E in the AM peak. And what's interesting about Dean Forest is it actually got worse. Based on our reporting as part of the 307 study, we had seen level service D in the AM. So that continues to be a major bottleneck for the corridor. Another one I want to point out is the West Side Boulevard intersection showing level service F. There is a signal that's been permitted at that intersection, and so we do anticipate some improvement in the operations at that intersection specifically. And finally, at Kessler Avenue showing level service E, I'll show a picture in just a second. That's largely attributed to some of the queuing that we observe at the Chatham Parkway intersection, because Kessler Avenue traffic can't really find a gap to get onto 80. And so that's largely why that intersection is performing at level service E. So next slide. So part of what we do when we evaluate traffic is we also couple our analysis with some good old fashioned field observations. And the field observations were really depicted here by the red lines, which represent the length of the queuing that we noticed when we were out there back in September. So a couple key observations, and this probably won't surprise many of you, that the queuing tends to be worse in the morning around I-95, especially in the eastbound direction in Old Town Pooler, when queuing often extends all the way back to Pooler City Hall. And then similarly at 307, Dean Forest Road in the eastbound direction, queuing often extends in excess of a mile all the way back to Pine Barren Road, or even past Pine Barren in some instances. Other key notes, we did observe some queuing on the southbound off-ramp at I-95. And at Chatham Parkway, which I mentioned before, kind of contributes to some poor performance at Kessler Avenue specifically. So I've got some pictures that kind of help illustrate some of these conditions. This one is at the southbound off-ramp at I-95, and you can see some of the queuing backing up really all the way back to the Gore along the interstate. And our understanding is that there is a quick response project that's planned by GDOT that would lengthen some of the storage lengths of the existing auxiliary turn lanes. And based on our observations, that would likely improve the performance of this intersection. The next picture, so the next picture I've alluded to a few times, but this is looking west at the eastbound traffic at Chatham Parkway. And you can see the queues already extending, you know, between a quarter mile and a third of a mile to the west approaching the port. So just some notable morning observations, and we'll move into the afternoon observations. So you'll notice a few more intersections here, particularly in segment one. And my main message for those of you today is it's not as bad as it might look. The blue intersections shown at the top in segment one are all minor street stop controlled intersections. with very, very low volumes relative to other intersections. And our observations that we'll show in just a second all exhibited very low queues. So again, not as bad as it appears. It really just boils down to some of the primary bottlenecks, like some repeat offenders here at Westside Boulevard and Old Dean Forest Road especially. But one additional intersection in the PM is Coleman Boulevard that exhibits level service E conditions. And similar to Westside, there's another signal that's actually under construction at that intersection that we anticipate will really help conditions in the busy part of segment 3, which, as I noted, has the heaviest traffic along the study section of 80. So some observations that we had, if you go ahead to the next slide, Chris. Yep, so you'll notice here that our queuing observations are largely the inverse of what we saw in the morning. At I-95 and at 307, the queues switch from the eastbound to the westbound sides. And again, they extend almost a mile, if not more, in some instances, especially at I-95, they often extend all the way back past Pine Barren Road. So some pretty significant queuing there. And similar to the morning, we observed that continual southbound off-ramp queue on I-95. But one new distinct difference is in Bloomingdale, we did observe some queuing at the State Route 17 Cherry Street intersection, which somewhat contributed to that level of service at some of those minor street intersections that we described on the previous slide. Go ahead, Chris. So a couple of pictures to help illustrate these conditions. This is looking east at the westbound queuing along 80, just east of the 95 northbound ramps. And this was actually taken pretty early during the PM peak. You can see queuing already backing up pretty well past Bourne Avenue, kind of right there in the background there. Then the next photo is an intersection with which we're all very familiar, Dean Forest Road. Similar, this was taken pretty early on and queuing's already beginning to extend. But one key difference is notice the difference in the truck traffic compared to that of I-95. It's just indicative of the adjacent land uses coming to and from the George Ports Authority. So in addition to the traffic, we've also done a pretty deep dive into the crash history along the study route. And the latest 5 years of available data is from 2017 to 2021. So all of what we're going to report is based on that 5-year period. In that period, about 2,100 crashes were reported along the 12-mile stretch. Three of those were unfortunately resulted in fatal crashes. But generally, the severity of the crashes along the route is pretty low, as about 93% of all crashes are classified as property damage only, or PDO, so that's a good thing. One of the main takeaways is that 5 of the 6 segments that we defined earlier exceed the statewide average in crash rates. And in fact, only segment 1, near the undeveloped portion of Jimmy DeLoach, is the only one that has a rate lower than the state average. So we'll dig into the rates in just a minute. Using some formulas from Federal Highway Administration, these crashes on an annual basis cost upwards of $20 million per year. So really all of this just continues to reinforce the notion that there is a clear need for safety investments along the corridor. So here's a map which really helps to illustrate where these specific types of crashes are occurring. And as I mentioned earlier, there were 3 fatal crashes, each of which are represented by a red dot, and they kind of just occurred randomly throughout the corridor. But what I think are some of the key observations is notice right where it says Pooler, just west of I-95, you'll notice a greater proportion of the small green PDO dots. And that's really indicative, I think, of the existing typical section through there where US 80 splits into a one-way pair with a 35-mile-per-hour speed. But the other observation I would say is notice how that the severity of the crashes tends to increase at the major intersections or interchanges, namely Jimmy DeLoach, Pooler Parkway, and even State Route 307. So I mentioned crash rates before, and how we normalize crash rates when you have variable length segments is you convert crash rates into 100 million vehicle miles traveled, or HMVMT. It's a tongue twister. So segment 1, as I mentioned, is the only one that was lower than the statewide average. It exhibited crash rates about 160 crashes per HMVMT, but But that really jumps once you get to segments 2 and 3 near I-95 with upwards of 800 crashes per HMVMT. For reference, the statewide average is about 175 crashes. So this is a significant, significant difference compared to the average. And even segments 4, 5, and 6 continue to exhibit rates that are, you know, quite larger than that. So again, it's just continuing to reinforce that notion that there's a significant safety need along this route. And I'll close with, yes, ma'am.
I'd just let you know, you're at 15 minutes now. Okay. You can try to wrap up in about 5.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. We're almost done. So my last slide is what we call a heat map. It kind of helps to illustrate where the crashes are most frequently occurring. Kind of the brighter colors, you know, indicate where they're happening most frequently. And obviously, back to the rates, you can see they're really concentrated around I-95 and Pooler, and also the major intersections like Pooler Parkway, Pine Barren, and 307. And so with that, I'll turn it back over to Chris.
Chris, did we lose you?
Yeah, me now. Sorry about that. So I mentioned earlier that this is a major freight corridor, and it also crosses a number of major freight corridors. I'm not going to read all of those to you, but I think we're all familiar with them. We also cross a couple of rail corridors, but unlike the State Route 307 corridors, there are no at-grade rail crossings on this study corridor. There is, however, one grade separation at the Kicklighter overpass, which crosses both CSX and NS. So just to illustrate a little more of the point that Rhodes made earlier regarding the number of trucks in the queue, you can see pictures from a couple of different segments, State Route 17 connected to the Jimmy Loach Parkway, also again at 307 and Dean Forest Road, and then at Chatham Parkway. So we're seeing these trucks throughout the US 80 corridor, reinforcing the fact that it is absolutely a heavy freight corridor. We also are considering pedestrians and bicyclists in the study. US 80 is a designated bike route. It's bike route 85. It's also referred to as the Savannah River Run. The non-motorized transportation plan recommends a shared use path or trail from Adams Road to Chatham Parkway along the corridor, and then from Chatham Parkway to the eastern end of the project, it recommends bike lanes. There's an existing variability in the typical section throughout the corridor, which makes cycling the corridor and traveling along the corridor as a pedestrian a little challenging. So there is a latent demand for pedestrian access and also for bicyclist access, as we noted during our existing conditions reporting. We plan to target improvements in the network, especially where there are gaps. And some of those occur in the downtown Pooler area, where we think providing greater connectivity is vital to the economic viability in the downtown Pooler area, and also connecting to some of the recreational facilities along the corridor would really improve access to those areas and the use of those. A couple of the intersections that are illustrated here show some of the existing facilities and show some of the lack of connectivity as well. Interesting to note the cyclist approaching the Kicklighter overpass in the lower right-hand corner, where there's not much of a facility there for them to use, yet the corridor is designated as Georgia's Bike Route 85. We're also considering transit as part of the study. There's one existing CAT stop along the corridor. It's on the eastern end of the study near Burnside. It's part of CAT Route 3B. And a majority of the corridor, like the 307 study, is outside of the transit district. So we wouldn't expect, of course, to see much existing transit along the corridor. But we do suspect, like the 307 study, that there is some hidden demand related to the warehouse developments and their workforces, and prior studies have suggested a need for expansion. This is just a quick look at CAT's system map, and you can see at the eastern end of the study corridor, as I mentioned, Route 3B does overlap with one stop on the corridor. In summary, our solutions are going to include an access management strategy. It needs to be prioritized for this quarter to minimize conflicts and reduce crash frequency. And capacity and safety are absolutely key. And those are the most vulnerable at intersections. So we're going to be investigating improvements there. And we're, as I mentioned before, we're going to be looking at potential improvements for other modes of transportation, including transit, pedestrians, and bicycles. So some of the improvements that we've identified to date are some major ones, some auxiliary lane improvements at I-95, improvements at the Pine Barren Road, Old Louisville Road intersection, similar 307 at Dean Forest, a major improvement is needed there. You'd expect Chatham Parkway as well. And then we also have the potential to expand the freight connected vehicle network, which GDOT has installed along State Route 21 and along 307. And then some of the planned safety improvement projects would be access management, like raised medians and consolidating driveways and some innovative intersections. And then, of course, pedestrian and bicycle facility implementation as part of some of these other projects is very important to the corridor, as well as some affordable transportation options. This is a real quick look at a couple of the improvements that I just mentioned. You're looking at Pine Barren Road and US 80 on the left. So some intersection improvements that we would be targeting there. And then also we pulled the State Route 307 at State Route 26, US 80 interchange from the State Route 307 study. Still a very viable option based on our initial findings in this existing condition study. So our next steps are some preliminary stakeholder meetings, and then we're going to start delving into the concept development of the alternatives. We'll have another MPO presentation prior to a public information open house, and that will be to show the MPO what we plan to take to the public. And then following that, we'll have another meeting with our stakeholder advisory committee. And then we'll use information from the public and from the stakeholders to finalize our draft report, which will be submitted for review. And there'll be a comment period associated with that. And then following that, we would deliver our final report. I apologize for going over, but we're happy to entertain any questions. And also our contact information is here, so you're welcome to contact us by phone or by email with any follow-up information or questions. Thank you for your time, and we appreciate your input.
Thank you. Very informative. Thank you. I appreciate that. Does anyone have any questions for Chris or Rhodes? No? All right. Thank you. All right, we'll move on to the next item on the agenda, which is our status reports. We'll start with the 2050 MTP plan update. Asia, thank you.
Thank you so much. I'll just give a short status report. So for the Moving Forward Together plan, public input is extremely important, and it's important because we use public input to update our goals and objectives. So we're just going to be going over only a couple of items related to the draft goals and objectives, and that's the specific survey results we want to highlight, and then how exactly we have updated the goals and objectives. So in regard to the public survey, as of November 21st, we received 409 responses, and those 409 responses are what we used to update the survey, draft goals and objectives. So we are still accepting responses on the survey, the survey responses can still be used to update other parts content within the Metropolitan Transportation Plan update. And then again, the survey was available in four languages, and it covered a variety of transportation topics such as roadways, bikes, pedestrians, public transportation, equity, and resilience. So just getting in, I actually presented these last month, and surprisingly, these all pretty much held. They all pretty much stayed the same. So still, people value maintaining and repairing our roadways, infrastructure, and facilities. And this is just a chart showing, a bar chart showing some of the survey results. There was still significant interest in a local rail service and public transportation, which is you can see highlighted here with the arrows. Most respondents still wanted bike lanes that were protected by a barrier or a greenway that supports multiple modes of non-motorized transportation, which you can see highlighted here. And again, 67% of respondents want to increase green and nature-based infrastructure and transportation projects to reduce flooding and heat stress and improve the health of the environment. And 74% of respondents still want to identify and target high need population areas where transit investment should be prioritized. So now we're just going to go into the actual goals and objectives. And in red is what we actually updated and what we added. So for safety and security, we added more language about resilience. Resilience and flooding specifically not only was a popular survey response, but it also came up in our open-ended questions. Again, a lot of people made reference to flooding and having issues with flooding on roadways. So that's why we found it necessary to add explicit language on that within safety and security. In terms of access and connectivity, we added a lot. So in A, we added a small section to the end to improve the connectivity of the bike and pedestrian network, just because we wanted to emphasize that connectivity portion for bike and pedestrian facilities. We also wanted to emphasize the state of good repair, just because a common survey response was that some sidewalks were cracked or in a state of disrepair. In D, or strategy objective D, we added rail travel just because that was also a common survey response, talking about rail, high-speed rail, other types of rail transit. Additionally, we added, we just changed the language on this from vulnerable to disadvantaged, just so it can kind of match the language that we used in the survey. We also added prioritizing transit investment in high-need populations, since that was such a popular survey answer, and then made specific language on separating bike lanes and pedestrian networks on roadways where necessary. For system and environmental preservation, we added maintain and improve our existing roads, transportation infrastructure, and facilities, just because there is heavier interest in maintaining what we already have rather than building something new. So we wanted to make explicit language on maintaining what already exists. And that's the end of our draft goals and survey results. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
All right.
No questions for Asia? Okay,
perfect.
So are you also doing the non-motorized transportation plan update?
Yes, I am. So I just wanted to go a little bit into some of the research and international perspectives that I am adding to the non-motorized transportation plan, and then also the thoroughfare plan. And so some of the content is just going to be analyzing specifically Dutch bike infrastructure, and then also a lot of the FHWA proven safety countermeasures, and then how to adapt that research to the local area. And I really wanted to put an emphasis on adapt, just because it's easy to see how another country is doing something and just say, hey, maybe let's copy that. But the Netherlands is a different place from the United States, so it can't just be a copy and paste into how we do something in our local area. We do have to keep in mind our own local laws, economic system, and geography as well. So the FHWA actually created some documents in conjunction with planners within the Netherlands and released a series of documents explaining how they developed their bike and pedestrian infrastructure. And then they also compiled research that detailed strategies that can be implemented to make our roadways safer. And so we can use those documents to better update our non-motorized transportation plan and our thoroughfare plan. So the documents themselves, they were 80, 90, 100 pages. So I just wanted to condense it down into less than 10 slides. So here are some of the biggest takeaways from those documents. Prioritizing seamless and efficient bike movement is extremely important. And so that means minimizing stops for cyclists by having less signal and signage. And instead, in the Netherlands, rather than having lots of signs and signals, they slow speeds down on roadways. So instead of having a stoplight where bicyclists might have to stop, they might actually just share the road with motor vehicles, but they share the road at very low speeds, and low speeds as in under 20 miles per hour. Trust in users and in adaptability of the transportation system. So in some areas, there's very strict separation between bike and pedestrians on Dutch roadways. But in other areas, there's less strict separation. And so that made it easier to create a freedom of movement. And to achieve this, again, for shared roads, the speeds had to be slowed down a lot. Designs influence travel behavior. So something that was done in the Netherlands was the use of visual narrowing on roadways. And that's just to make drivers drive slower so that if they are sharing a roadway with a pedestrian or a bicyclist, they automatically start driving a lot slower so that you have more time to react to your road conditions. They also prioritize bicycle connectivity by creating entire bicycle networks. And they also connected their bicycle networks to other forms of transportation, such as their local bus system or train system. And those actually all reinforced each other. So transit reinforced bike networks, which reinforced pedestrian networks. And a lot of this was achieved using experimentation. So in order to determine the most effective infrastructure and strategies, small-scale real-world transportation tests were conducted. And that usually meant making a temporary bike lane or a temporary reduction in speed. And then they're seeing in real time what actually worked. And if those experiments were successful, that those changes were instituted permanently. Some of the priorities in the Netherlands is cohesion of bikeways, attractiveness, feelings of safety by having bikeways be well lit and going through well populated areas, and having them also be comfortable so it's not a stressful experience. So another thing that was mentioned was that the Netherlands don't necessarily try to make all roads complete streets. Instead, they have a separate philosophy where in some cases, bikeways need to be completely separated from motorways, either with a greenway or a bikeway that is separated physically with some type of barrier. So we don't necessarily want to make a high capacity, high speed road a complete street. And that if a road is a high capacity, high speed road, we instead want to make a completely separate bikeway. So that's completely separated out from that traffic. And if they are sharing the road, we want to make those speeds very, very slow so everyone can get used and comfortable to the transportation environment. The small scale transportation tests were used to see what did and did not work, and then they were applied on a wider scale. And then additionally, a variety of disciplines were used to kind of understand Dutch culture, Dutch economics, and Dutch environment, the Dutch geography, because all of those were important in the planning process. So it was a collaborative effort among multiple disciplines. In addition, the FHWA also compiled research showing what some of the safest bike and pedestrian infrastructure we can include. So bike lanes can reduce crashes up to 49%. High visibility crosswalks can reduce pedestrian injuries up to 40%. Rectangular rapid flashing beacons can increase motorist yielding rates up to 98%. Sidewalks can reduce pedestrian involved crashes from 65 to 89%, and letting pedestrians enter the crosswalk 3 to 7 seconds before vehicles are given a green light can reduce pedestrian vehicle crashes by 13%. And these are just links to some of the FHWA resources. And in addition to that, I'm also looking into New Metric and compiling some of the roads that are seeing the most issues with bike and pedestrian crashes. I haven't completed that compilation, but when I do, I'll definitely send it to our meeting group, our stakeholder and steering committee group. Are there any questions? Okay, good. Great. Seal of approval.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, if there's no questions for Asia, then we'll move on to the next item, which is the freight transportation plan update.
I just had a project manager's meeting this morning with Chris. So I just want to mention, so far they have conducted 10 one-on-one interviews with the stakeholders. Actually at 2 o'clock, they were interviewing the CSX and I think one of those railroad companies, major railroad companies today. Several deliverables are already posted over here on the website. Under task two, freight needs assessment analysis, almost all of these are making tremendous progress, almost done or addressing comments comments are already addressed because FHW sent us comments. So the only task that remains to be delivered is the freight network congestion, bottleneck and safety and security issues. So hopefully that one will be done by the end of next week. And then also for the truck parking inventory and truck restrictions, because they identified the truck supply, but I want to know the truck demand. So the truck parking demand. So they're actually addressing that part. They do some further analysis. Task 1 or 2.1 to 2.7 will feed into task 2.8 because that's the summary. So hopefully all the deliverables and task 2 will be by the end of this year. And they're already starting the land use assessment analysis and economic development market assessment for freight, and then environmental and community impact scan. And so that one is farther along. So by February, they will do a presentation. So by that time, all of this task 2, 3, 4, and 5 will be done. From March until the end of the study, we will be focusing on the recommendations, land use recommendations and infrastructure recommendations. So I actually received 2 more deliverables, so I will post them over here for you to access. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Wicca. Does anyone have any questions about that? All right, thank you. Last one is the urban flooding model. Jasmine, thank you.
Hello again. The UGA consulting team had their status meeting in November. I attended the meeting, and one of the things that was highlighted was the team is requesting critical infrastructure GIS data. I've already reached out to some jurisdictions, and I believe they reached out to Chatham County, I believe, for this information. But if you all have access to this information or just can share a contact with me, that will be helpful to help with the development of this project. And this is needed for the road vulnerability assessment. And the team will present at the next TCC meeting in February. So I look forward to seeing you, all of you there and getting those updates, but that's all I have at this time. Anyone has any questions? All righty, thank you.
Thank you, Jasmine. All right.
I do want to mention something, not this one. Asia actually already attached this RFP from the governor's office under the non-motorized transportation plan. So this is some funding opportunity for the local governments and civic organizations. So if you interested in the bicycle pedestrian safety, so any kind of safety improvements, take a look at this if you're interested in applying for the funds. I just want to mention that.
Is that a new grant opportunity? Is that what that is? What's it called?
It's the governor's innovative grants. So this is some new funding resource for us. So if you want to take a look at it, like even bicycle, bike walk Savannah.
So we currently receive the grant from the Governor's Office of Highway Safety. So that helps pay for some of our advocacy work as well as education classes and events. Okay. So if you have any questions about it, let me know.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. So for the information reports, we'll start with GDOT. Katie, is that going to be you?
Hey. So for time, I'll just like scan over it real quick. Their pre-construction statuses are all pretty much the same. There's nothing major going on. And for the construction, everything's progressing. These two at the top, 93% and 83%, they're actually complete, except for just waiting for a couple of things like strapping material to finish and awaiting the loop signal acceptance for the 6078. And so those might be falling off before you see it again. And the rest, they're all just progressing as usual.
Okay, thank you, Katie. Does anyone have any questions about any of the GDOT projects? Okay. The next one that's listed is the Lowcountry. Okay.
She's not on, so this report here is just for information.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
And the next one is City of Savannah.
So right-of-way clearing is complete, and we are there. Currently working on utility relocation. Our traffic control center has been, and it was noted earlier in the report, that the city is self-funding that, and they've had the pre-con, and we anticipate completion before St. Patrick's Day. Excuse me. For 516 Duran, right-of-way plan prep is complete. Federal Highway did request additional outreach to the environmental justice community and are in currently reviewing a plan for that engagement. And the Truman Linear Park Trail, TB, they're doing some reevaluations, and we anticipate it to be let for construction in early 23.
Wonderful, thank you, Michelle. See, Chatham County, let's see, everything's still pretty much progressing. There's not a whole lot to go over. Does anyone have any specific questions about any Chatham County projects? Okay, we'll move on. Chatham Area Transit.
Chatham Area Transit's projects are currently in a similar status. We have moved forward with our paratransit vehicle purchase order. We are looking at purchasing 6 of the 33 original paratransit vehicles, and we are currently working through contract for the remaining number. Our Clever ITS system is mostly complete at this time and will be closed out. And our ferry dock and maintenance facility is currently with the FTA and grant execution. The following are master transit plan and implementation strategies, our transit development plan and comprehensive operations analysis, and as well as our grant funding for additional planning funds and areas of persistent poverty and the American Rescue Plan route restoration analysis. If there are any questions.
Thank you, Ashley. Savannah Hilton Head International Airport. Okay, moving on, the TIP tracking status update. I guess the most important thing is, did you get all the information that you needed for everybody? Sally?
I did, yes, ma'am. And the only thing really that changed was we added on for CAT, the AOPP, and those two lines. So there's two new lines on here, but other than that, everything was updated and everything is in.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any public comments? Anybody from the public want to make a comment at this time? Okay. All right. Then other than that, the notices, the next core MPO meeting, TCC, is going to be February 16th, 2023. And the AMPO conference presentation is attached if anyone wants to look at that. And there's nothing else. We are adjourned. Thank you so much.